Prepare to experience the strongest radio allowable by law. Secrets will be revealed. Myths dispelled. From the studio gym where excuses never apply, it's Superhuman Radio with your host, Carl Lenore.
Hey, welcome back to another episode of Superhuman Radio. A couple of announcements I want to make real quick and get them out of the way. A lot of people have been waiting for ginger extract patiently. Thank you for being patient. Everything is going to be shipped this week. I really got hit hard as a result of the show we did with John Finnegan about curing cancer, especially stomach cancer, with ginger extract. And I did not expect the response from the audience that we got. I was not prepared. As you know, I've never sold anything through the radio show before. And so everything is going to be shipped this week. So those of you who are waiting, you will receive an email when the labels are printed for your order, and you'll know that it's on its way. And everything is going to be shipped priority, so things should arrive in 2 to 3 days from the date of the notice. Also, we still have plenty of Superhuman Radio Live Stronger T-shirts. Just go to the website, superhumanradio.com. Right on the homepage, you'll see a link to the Live Stronger t-shirt page where you can order. The shirt is just $19.95. It's a beautiful, high-quality black shirt that you will be proud to wear anywhere, and it will make you look good because the design on the shirt is really cool. So check that out also. Okay, we've got a really important show today. There's always been a lot of discussion on the importance and the effects of the rest interval in between your sets. You know, some of us like to speed along. Vince Gironda was a big proponent of moving very quickly through the gym. There are others who say, you know, 3 to 5 minutes so that you totally recover, so you can push as hard as you can during the next set. And lots of schools of thought, lots of people doing different things out there, but no one has actually really looked at this in the way my guests group has in the past. And that is, no one's actually looked at trained individuals. Lots of research has been done on individuals that are untrained. But as we know, those of us who train real hard, those rules generally don't apply once you train for a long period of time. So my guest today is Dr. Bob Burrish, and he is from the Department of Health in Kennesaw State University, Kennesaw, Georgia. Welcome to the show, Dr. Burrish.
Thank you, Carl. It's nice to be here.
Yeah, and you know, and this is really an important study because, you know, there's an old saying, you know, read between the lines, and it's not what you're doing sometimes, but what you're not doing that has the biggest effect. And we all know that those rest intervals in between our sets play a role, but most of us don't know what that role is or how to optimize it. So your group kind of looked at this from a hormonal response point of view, correct?
Yeah, if I may just kind of set the stage a little.
Please.
There are, as you rightly mentioned, there's a pretty profound interplay, obviously, between rest between sets and workload and all of those factors that people consider in designing a training program. And as you mentioned, some people recommend longer rest periods. Generally, that's designed primarily for people who are interested, especially in strength or power performance, people who are trying to move as much mass as possible.
Correct.
And then there are people who are more interested in hypertrophy or aesthetics. And again, many times those types of training protocols utilize a shorter rest period with a more, I guess the target being a more profound lactate response that studies had previously shown, acutely anyway, in people who were untrained, very closely paralleled hormonal responses. So the types of protocols that elicited a more profound lactate response, basically 10, 12 reps per set, relatively short, 30 seconds to 1 minute intervals between sets, tended to elicit also a more profound growth hormone and testosterone and cortisol response. And so there was, again, a lot of work already basically pointing towards that as pretty much irrefutable. What we wanted to see was how long that response would last in people who were previously untrained. In other words, would that effect still be seen? Would the difference in those two protocols, maybe one group doing 2.5 minute rest between sets and one group doing just 1 minute rest between sets, would those differences still be seen 5 or 10 weeks later?
Right.
And we found that, in fact, those differences weren't seen, that within 5 weeks, those two groups, even though nothing really changed in the exercise protocol, looked very similar.
Well, let's do this. Describe the way the study was set up. How many individuals participated?
We had about, boy, it's been a while. We had about 20 subjects, I believe, in each group.
Okay. And group A did what? Group A did what?
Group A, the protocol, the training design was exactly the same in both groups. The only difference was that group A did a 2.5-minute rest between sets, and that seems like an odd time. We chose that because we wanted to get people in and out of the gym in 1 hour, and moving towards 3 minutes would actually have pushed them over an hour. So
right.
2.5-minute rest between sets, and the other group did 1-minute rest between sets. Everything else in the design was exactly the same.
What kind of rep schemes were they working with?
Three sets of 10 reps for most of the exercises.
Okay.
For smaller muscle groups, two sets of 10 repetitions.
Okay. All right. And so these individuals...
quick thing. The ideal was that they would fail between their 8th and 10th repetition on their final set.
So they were probably using something like 75 to 80% of their maximum.
Probably very close to that,
right.
Yes, sir.
Okay. And so the two groups were previously untrained? Okay, so these were people that had not been training prior until they stepped into...
For at least 3 months, right?
Okay. So they step into the program, and the group that follows Plan A, let's say, which was the 2.5-minute rest, and the group that's followed Plan B, which was a 1-minute rest.
That'd be a fascinating follow up, but no, we didn't.
Okay. All right. And nutrition wasn't followed at all, I would imagine, in these groups.
We simply asked them to quantify their protein intake. That was really all we emphasized. We didn't give them any real deep or specific nutrition guidelines. It was very much
Do we know if any of them were using pre-workout protein, carbohydrate drinks, or anything like that?
No supplements. We specifically asked that they not take supplements.
So it was just whole food diet. That's it.
Right.
Okay. Great. Did they train in the morning, or did they train whenever they could, or how?
When they could, and they logged their training times. I you know what? I didn't look specifically, but it was very consistent. Those who exercised. Basically, people tended to exercise at about the same time every day based on their schedule.
Was there any difference in the individuals that trained first thing in the morning versus the individuals that trained later in the day?
I can't speak to that. We did not look at that.
Okay. I'm just curious. Because
I'm not sure I have enough of an incise even to do an analysis.
I know. And these are small groups. Okay.
Uh-huh.
All right. So the initial response, hormonal response to exercise, was that the same in both groups?
No. See, that's what we essentially confirmed what others have reported. After their very first exercise session, we grabbed some blood and we assayed it for growth hormone, testosterone, and cortisol. And the response was exactly as others had seen, that there was a more dramatic increase in those levels in those who were doing the shorter rest interval, the exercise protocol that's more linked with or more associated with a more profound lactate response.
Were these serum levels, or were you biopsying muscle?
Sir.
Okay, so these
are serum levels. Yeah.
Okay, because that doesn't necessarily correspond with muscular hormonal responses, which can actually be independent of serum responses, correct?
Yeah, there's usually a fairly good association, though,
okay.
At least in my understanding of it.
Okay, all right.
There's a timing issue when you start comparing what's going on in the muscle and what happens at the plasma level. But
does it generally happen in muscle first or in plasma first?
Yes, sir. Mm-hmm.
It does. So really what we're seeing in plasma is probably an overflow of what's happening in muscle.
Yeah, and that's why, again, researchers will usually quantify the time after exercise when they actually assay the plasma. That's kind of the critical factor. Because if there is an effect inside the muscle, that's going to peak at some point in the plasma.
Hmm. Interesting. Okay. All right, the group that was using the shortest rest periods saw the greatest increase in hormonal response, and the group that was having the longer rest periods did not see. Was it a dramatic difference, or was it marginal, the difference between the two groups?
It was statistically significant. I'm looking at the figure here, and I have the mean sort of in front of me. The testosterone response in the short rest group yielded about 0.41, 0.42 millimoles per liter in the short rest group and about a 0.25.
Wow, that's significant.
So yeah, it was a significantly different effect in testosterone and cortisol.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, well look, let's take a quick commercial break. When we come back, I want to talk about how things changed and over what period of time. You're listening to Superhuman Radio. We're talking with Dr. Bob Burrish today about the effects of different rest intervals on your hormonal responses to exercise. Stay tuned. We'll be right back. Confused about which creatine product to take? Ancient Strength solves that problem. Ancient Strength combines the three most effective forms of creatine, creatine monohydrate, creatine phosphate, and creatine pyruvate, into a single product. Ancient Strength will propel your workouts to amazing new levels. Ancient Strength will give you the strength of your ancestors so you can push through those plateaus, eke out those last few reps that are the most productive in building new muscle. Get Ancient Strength today at needtobuildmuscle.com. Harness the strength of your ancestors with Ancient Strength.
A company committed to truth in advertising, to science-driven product development, a company that still believes in accountability to its customers. All American EFX is that company. With a full line of performance-enhancing aids like Crealkaline EFX Pro, muscle pump amplifiers like Nitrix EFX, growth and recovery enhancers like LBA Pro and LG5 Pro, and a fully tested core nutrition series. So if you want the very best in bodybuilding and performance supplements, go to any GNC or visit AAEFX.com today. That's AAEFX.com. All American EFX. We don't play games, we just help you win them.
Thousands of Superhuman Radio listeners already know how well GLC 2000 works at repairing joints and cartilage, and it's the best price on the market, milligram for milligram. Now GLC Direct is offering a special that my listeners can take advantage of. Buy one, get one free of any GLC 2000 product. That's right, buy one of your favorite GLC 2000 products and get one free. Capsules or raw powder. Just mention Superhuman Radio and buy one, get one free today. Call 866-452-3473 or click the GLC banner ad on superhumanradio.com. Offer limited to one per household. All of your favorite supplements are waiting for you at the best prices and fastest customer service at orbitnutrition.com. Even some of the more popular supplements advertised right here on Superhuman Radio. They carry All American EFX, LG Sciences, and Primordial Performance products at the best prices on the net. Visit orbitnutrition.com today and check out their complete line. Give them a chance to fill your order. You won't be disappointed. orbitnutrition.com. The best supplements in the universe are at orbitnutrition.com. Are you tired of the same old pre-workout product? Would you like to catapult your body's growth and performance potential to an entirely new level? LG Sciences Anadrolic State GT is the world's first kinetic amplification system. Anadrolic State GT goes beyond the pre-workout powders in functionality, adaptation, and power. Anadrolic State GT is the first of its kind, allowing users to take aggressive control in the gym with ferocious focus, explosive energy, and dominating strength. Anadrolic State GT is available at bodybuilding.com, NutriPlanet, and other fine retailers. Get yours today and join the LG Sciences uprising. Life is a continuous journey, and Change Your Life Now gives you the tools for continuous empowerment. Change Your Life Now is a practical guide to the biological process of age reversal. It's deliberately understandable and concise, so you can employ its message immediately and begin to realize the changes within days. The reader need only provide a positive attitude, desire, and discipline, and the results are guaranteed. Visit superhumanradio.com and click the Change Your Life Now banner ad to learn more or to order your copy today. Don't wait another moment. Change your life now.
Build muscle. Burn fat. It's Superhuman Radio.
On the cool check-in. Center stage on the mic. And we're putting it on wax. It's the new style.
Got the Beastie Boys and Led Zeppelin taking us back out of the break, baby. You don't hear music like this on any other radio show except Superhuman Radio. Just want to remind everybody there's lots of free stuff at superhumanradio.com. You can get free samples of Concrete, this new type of creatine. You can also get free samples of Gamma O, which is a natural testosterone booster, free samples of Ibunex, which is a topical ibuprofen product. Oh, gosh, free samples of Drive, which is a pre-workout supplement that does not have any stimulants in it. So if you like to train at night, you can. Free samples of All-American EFX's new Cree Alkaline Pro. It's all there for the taking. Just go to superhumanradio.com. Click on the links for those products down in the free stuff area. The manufacturers mail them right to you, and you never pay shipping and handling when we give you free stuff on this show. So take advantage of it. Tell your friends. Tell your family. Have your mom use some creatine. You know, she'll be able to lift those frying pans faster and cook faster and everything. Anyway, okay, so we're talking with Dr. Bob Burrish today about the recent study that they did that evaluated hormonal response and length of rest in between sets of exercise. And so now how long did these individuals participate in the study? Did you say 5 weeks, 6 weeks?
It was a 10-week study.
10-week, okay, great.
We assayed blood at the end of their first session, basically the very first exercise session. We did the same session, so I believe it was the day that involved the legs. We wanted to get the most profound hormonal response. So it was a two-day split routine, and they were exercised four times a week. Each body part got two sessions per week. And so we assayed it after their first leg session, and then after the last leg session in their fifth week, and after the last leg session in their tenth week.
Now, did you set up the exercise choices, or did they do what they want to do?
No, they all were given a design. We actually did their exercise.
So did they squat? Did they squat?
Yes, squatting was a part of the exercise.
Did they deadlift?
Smith machine squat, no deadlift.
No deadlifts, okay. Because, you know, the squat has been known to, like, and obviously that's why you check these levels after leg day, because the squat has been known to really elicit one of the greatest hormonal responses along with the deadlift.
Definitely, yeah. It's got the biggest, the greatest muscle involvement, and you'd almost expect that would be the case.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, so... give me an idea of how the hormonal levels occurred and how they changed and where they ended up.
Okay. Well, as I mentioned before, after their first session, those hormonal levels were very much as others had found, and cortisol, testosterone were both significantly higher in the group that did the shorter rest periods. That was about 1 minute rest between sets than those who did the 2.5 minute rest between sets. Also, the growth hormone levels, although they were certainly tended to be greater in those that did the shorter rest periods between sets, it was not statistically significant, but there was still a trend.
Interesting.
And again, our end size was fairly small, so that probably explains some of that issue.
Right.
After 5 weeks, there was no longer a statistically significant difference between the two. And I actually have a couple of figures in the paper that very nicely show this, but the difference was largely dried up, if you want to call it that, within 5 weeks. And at 10 weeks, they looked identical hormonally. So much of the difference was erased, and there was no, technically there was no difference when you look at it from a statistical point of view. There was no difference anymore at 5 weeks, and that the lack of difference was. What little difference that remained was even further mitigated by 10.
Now, one of the things that I would be interested in understanding better is cortisol's response, only because we know that cortisol has the ability to attenuate the effects of androgens in the androgen receptor.
Mm-hmm.
And so cortisol was obviously higher in the shorter rest group as well, correct?
Yes, sir.
Okay. It almost seems like the response in testosterone has to be higher in order to overcompensate for the higher cortisol levels. I mean, I wonder if muscle. Did you look at the changes in protein synthesis at all?
We didn't even make an effort to quantify. That's obviously a much more invasive, and like you say, that starts to get into biopsy.
Yeah,
and that's a lot
yeah.
more expensive process. But just again,
and it's harder to find guys once they find that you're going to stick that big needle in their leg.
it's really not. It is. I mean, if you show it to them,
yeah.
a lot of times people are squeamish. But it's really not as painful as many people think it is.
I know.
The cortisol, though, many times I think people look at it as entirely a bad guy, and it's important to keep in mind that. If you are doing something that produces a good amount of muscular damage, cortisol goes in there and has a pretty key role in cleaning things up and the adaptive response that most people are after.
Yeah.
So cortisol, again, when you look at that, if you have a chronic imbalance, that's obviously not good, but after an acute bout of exercise, cortisol is sort of our friend, if you want to look at it that way.
Yeah. And then there's a couple schools of thought out there about You know, Lee Haney, who was a Mr. Olympia for many, many years, was a big proponent of not annihilating the muscles, and so not doing so much damage to the muscle, because he felt that the net was the most important thing, the net growth, the net response. And so if you're damaging the muscle so much that the net changes, the same as if you just went in and did two sets and went home, then you're not getting anything out of it. And that's why I point that out. I just wonder sometimes if you did this same research, but now looked at the synthetic response of protein in muscles, it would be interesting to see who grew the most out of these two hormonal groups.
Right. We looked at muscular cross-sectional area sort of coarsely.
Right.
And we obviously didn't see any significant difference. In 10 weeks, that's probably, again, what you'd expect to
see.
Untrained people are going to have an adaptive response to almost anything you throw at them.
Yeah, I know.
So a Lee Haney type would be obviously a different subject altogether. But it does kind of, you know, that is an effort, I think, an issue for people who are trying to sort of maximize their muscular development over time is what is the balancing point?
Right.
That idea that I can do a great deal of damage, but if I do, I'm going to have to, and at least in an unpharmacologically enhanced state, I'm going to have to allow more adaptation time, more recovery time before I'm ready to go again. And so that is an issue for people who are doing a lot of hours in the gym, is how much muscular damage should I actually do?
And there are those out there who, like Dr. Mauro DiPasquale, who believe even the chemically enhanced athletes don't take enough rest to truly recover properly, because while anabolic steroids may affect protein synthesis, they sometimes some of them don't do nearly as much for central nervous system and peripheral nervous system recovery and supercompensation. So while you may be able to get back in and beat those muscles up, your central nervous system, peripheral nervous system aren't ready. So even drug-using athletes, in my humble opinion, don't take enough rest.
I think that's true. They're probably closer as a result of their pharmacological benefits. But I agree. I think in many cases people are, if you want to use the term overreaching or over training, I think they certainly are, even in a drug using environment.
You know, I read an interesting study about 7 or 8 years ago that what I took away from it was that if you really want to see if you're overtraining, morning blood glucose levels will elucidate that for anybody. If you are waking up and you are hyper or hypoglycemic upon waking up, then you are overtraining. I'm talking about people who are really training very hard and they're eating clean and so on and so forth, because what happens when you start to overtrain is suppression of thyroid-stimulating hormone, which directly affects insulin sensitivity.
Yeah.
And so that's one of the good things.
There are a number of mechanisms. That makes sense, honestly. There are sort of another line that I'm pursuing, actually, is insulin sensitivity and type 2 diabetes. So I'm somewhat familiar with this. And if you are chronically, essentially, if you are chronically, and there are a lot of people, actually, who are looking at this from primarily an autonomic balance issue. If you are overwhelmingly autonomically imbalanced towards sympathetic response, then blood glucose levels can actually be fairly high, even in a resting or fasted state. So yes, sir.
Right. Yeah, it's very interesting. And you know, it's funny because once again, to go back to our drug using brethren here, but you know, anabolic steroids potentiate insulin resistance. And the higher doses potentiate a greater response. And so, you know, there's a lot of guys out there who are lean and mean who are completely insulin resistant. I'll give you some telltale signs. Anybody who's listening to this show, you wake up in the morning and your heart is pounding. As you wake up, paresthesia, peripheral tingling in the hands and feet. If you have periods of tinnitus where your ears are ringing, you are most definitely hyperinsulinemic. You need to think about doing things to balance the drugs that you're using, because you're becoming insulin resistant, and that's not a healthy thing. It's not a good thing, because we already know from the group in Canada, University of Quebec, they showed that glucose signaling is what leads to advanced aging. And so when you become insulin resistant and you have wild fluctuations in glucose There's a lot of damage that does to your body, even if you're not eating a lot of starchy carbs and sugary carbs, because your body is going through gluconeogenesis, is producing gobs of sugar through your liver.
Yeah, high glucose tells the body I need insulin, and that combination of high insulin and high glucose chronically is toxic to endothelium and vasculature, and again, that what's downstream of that, and it is a reason that there's such a profound relationship between diabetes and heart disease. So yeah, that's obviously not a condition you want to artificially induce. That's for sure.
Yeah, and that's why some of these doses that people are using today. I mean, I'm a big proponent of hormone replacement therapy, sensible hormone replacement therapy, but some of these guys out there are using a gram, 2 grams, 3 grams a week of various androgens, and it's and while you may feel great, there's things going on in your body that may not show up for a decade or two. And I'm not saying heart attacks and cancer like the group out there, but I am saying insulin resistance and whatever that leads to.
Well, see, and that's the thing. It isn't like you take your dose, you go work out, and you have a heart attack.
Right.
This is a mechanism that is basically the result of chronic behaviors for years. And so that's exactly right. If you're doing this chronically, I would certainly recommend people reconsider.
Yeah, yes, absolutely. Sir. All right, we're going to take a quick commercial break, and when we come back, we'll be talking more with Dr. Bob Borish about this and more fun things related to helping you get better response in the gym to your exercise. Stay tuned. You're listening to Superhuman Radio. Selective androgen receptor modulators represent the future of hormone replacement therapy. Institutions looking to perform research depend upon the potency and authenticity of the materials they buy. That's why your institution needs to trust Chemex for their SARMS materials. Go to chemx.net today for SARMS S4 for your research project. Don't trust the success of your project to questionable sources. Trust chemx.net. That's chemx.net. Chemex.net.
There are a few products that I believe in the way I believe in CanSee eye drops. I've been using CanSee for 6 months now, and the changes in my vision are nothing short of amazing. My near vision has improved, and I can read small print from 8 inches. My overall vision is clearer, and the glare from oncoming headlights doesn't bother me any longer. Just 1 to 2 drops a day, and the results are visible. You can find CanSee eye drops at wisechoicemedicine.net or call 800-861-4936. That's 800-861-4936. wisechoicemedicine.net. CanSee eye drops. The name says it all.
Thousands of Superhuman Radio listeners already know how well GLC 2000 works at repairing joints and cartilage, and it's the best price on the market, milligram for milligram. Now GLC Direct is offering a special that my listeners can take advantage of. Buy one, get one free of any GLC 2000 product. That's right. Buy one of your favorite GLC 2000 products and get one free. Capsules or raw powder. Just mention Superhuman Radio and buy one, get one free today. Call 866-452-3473 or click the GLC banner ad on superhumanradio.com. Offer limited to one per household. Selective androgen receptor modulators represent the future of hormone replacement therapy. Institutions looking to perform research depend upon the potency and authenticity of the materials they buy. That's why your institution needs to trust Chemex for their SARMS materials. Go to chemx.net today for SARMS S4 for your research project. Don't trust the success of your project to questionable sources. Trust chemx.net. That's chemx.net. Chemex.net. All of your favorite supplements are waiting for you at the best prices and fastest customer service at OrbitNutrition.com. Even some of the more popular supplements advertised right here on Superhuman Radio. They carry All-American EFX, LG Sciences, and Primordial Performance products at the best prices on the net. Visit OrbitNutrition.com today and check out their complete line. Give them a chance to fill your order. You won't be disappointed. OrbitNutrition.com. The best supplements in the universe are at OrbitNutrition.com. Turinabol from PrimordialPerformance.com Tom is a Haladrol clone. Turinabol will give you up to 15 pounds of lean body mass in as little as 6 weeks. Since Turinabol does not aromatize, there's no conversion to estrogen. Turinabol takes advantage of the patented Liquivade technology to ensure the maximum delivery of this powerful anabolic agent. Users of Turinabol report increased strength and lean gains with little side effects. Get Turinabol today while supplies last at PrimordialPerformance.com. Don't wait for Turinabol to be added to the federal ban list. Turinabol.
Your radio just got ripped. It's Superhuman Radio.
Welcome back to Superhuman Radio. So, Dr. Burrish, do you have some new studies planned as a result of what you learned in this one?
I would obviously like, as we sort of alluded to earlier, I would like to do. Well, let me kind of just go back to
Sort
of the take-home, I guess, of...
We were going to do that, too, a little bit later, but sure, go ahead.
Because I think it would lead to the next study, and that is, what does all of this mean? If after 5 weeks everybody hormonally is roughly the same, something probably, and if I want to continue to sort of maximize the hormonal response that I'm after or that my training elicits, probably I need to change things up, and it really, I think, really supports periodization and doing something, substantially different, something that will induce a more profound sympathetic response, probably, to your training.
And it looks like 5 weeks is the magic interval.
Interestingly, that is a duration that a lot of people, a lot of coaches and trainers do recommend. So,
but would it be would it be simple enough just to change your rest intervals every 5 weeks?
That's a great question, and that I guess would be sort of what I would like to do eventually. Sort of is just do exactly the same study, and then after 5 weeks, flip them. Just flip the two groups to just see if there was an acute bump, and both you would suspect that both groups would have an acute bump after such a design.
Wow, that's so pretty exciting. If that could be the magic bullet, so to speak, because everybody is always looking at when do you change your program up, how frequently. I have a good friend who we talked about his reactive wave training program where every 3 weeks you change it a little bit, and so mm-hmm. It's like if it turns out that this elucidates the window of time where the change has to occur to be 5 weeks. I mean, that would allow people to really perpetuate their gains and not hit plateaus, you would think.
Well, yeah, I mean, this is one piece of the puzzle, and I think a lot of times it gets real. People tend to look at one study and say, well, then this means this and that's all there is to it. The hormonal response is one adaptation or one adaptational response to exercise that is, though it's one important piece of the puzzle, it may not be the most important. The nutritional status and as you said, protein availability and amino acid availability and what specific amino acids are available, all of those things are going to have a role. Age and training status and all those things matter a great deal. But still, I mean, I think that for everyone, there's certainly something that can be learned from this, and that is that at least in part, that doing the same thing, no matter how hard you do it, if you work as hard as you can, if you're failing in the last set of your training, you're not going to be eliciting the same hormonal response after 5 weeks anymore.
Yeah, that's amazing. That is amazing. Is this where the next study is going? Are you going to look at? Are you going to do this where you cross them over and see if their hormonal responses bump again?
That would be that's certainly possible. Right now, to be honest with you, I got my PhD at University of Nebraska Medical Center, and we did some sort of my dissertation work moved from weight training and performance to diabetes and insulin sensitivity. So. In the summer here, I'm going to be starting a study with type 2 diabetics and basically quantifying the effect of multiple bouts of moderate intensity treadmill exercise twice a day versus once a day in that population on their long-term glucose control.
Really?
So that's kind of a whole different area, and I don't know but you know, to kind of tie these two things together, as you kind of mentioned earlier, these hormones do not act in a vacuum, and hormones influence the others. And as you had mentioned before, that there's thyroid and testosterone, cortisol, all of those, growth hormone has an influence on blood sugar that is mediated through
IGF-1.
Insulin sensitivity.
Right.
So that's one of the other sort of risk factors. And when people are considering our pharmacological enhancement, I often remind them that these things don't work necessarily even in a predictable way in everyone. And you have to be very careful when endocrinologists are some of the smartest people I've ever met. And the interplay between hormonal influences is pretty remarkable.
The only problem with endocrinologists in this day and age is that the vast majority of them focus exclusively on diabetes and insulin resistance. And they don't really look at a lot of the peripheral information any longer and how it interacts with that. There's a handful of good, true endocrinologists out there, but it seems like everybody has a specialty now, andrology or diabetes, and you know, it's just and it's kind of like, I look at endocrinologists today and I look at them like they are the conductors in an orchestra, but all they pay attention to is the oboe. Everybody else is doing whatever they want, and they're going to the oboe now. You do this, you know, and everybody else is just kind of out there doing it. It's like, you know, you can't do that. Hormones are like instruments in an orchestra, and you can't just look at the oboe. You got to look at everything, because everything affects the oboe, and the oboe affects everything else.
Exactly right, so, and I think you probably have a fairly short career as an endocrinologist if that's truly the way you approach your work.
Oh, I know, but
because if you are someone who has a clinical lack of some particular hormone, and you supplement that hormone, there's going to be an effect on others, and
that's
I
right.
think that the more of an understanding that people have of those relationships, the less. You know, the less downsides that those sorts of interventions can have.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. So, and so you were getting to the fact that you're not participating, or you don't plan on doing any further studies. It sounds like that, huh?
I don't have anything on the drawing board right here. We're working with a group that actually manufactures a temperature sensor that's going to be implanted in football helmets to quantify, to estimate core temperature based on what's being recorded at the forehead. So we did a little validation study there. And
is that for performance or for safety?
It's for safety. Yep.
Because you got the people that are dying of heat exhaustion and that sort of stuff.
Yeah, people, you know, you got a high school team out there and you're doing your two-a-days and they're wearing their helmets and you actually have a PDA as the coach or trainer on the sideline and it will record it will actually read back all of the temperatures of the kids who are wearing these helmets. And you can look at number 86 when he reaches maybe a certain critical temperature, and you can pull him off the field and ask if he's doing okay, make sure he gets some water, those sorts of things. So, yeah,
very
it's basically
smart.
Safety and prevention.
Very, very smart. Now, when do you expect that to be available on the market?
I don't know, and I don't even know that I'm even at liberty to discuss
name
of the company.
Yeah, sure. No.
But it's certainly going to be marketed relatively soon, and we've actually got the preliminary validation data. So we're actually this morning I was sitting around looking at the data and just comparing what this thing was estimating at a core temperature with what we read in a rectal thermometer. So
you had somebody wearing it and had a rectal thermometer in them at the same time, and you were comparing
yes,
the two. That must be a fun job for the test subject.
Well, yeah, believe it or not, they're not probably as afraid of a biopsy needle as they are that very tiny little.
Isn't that funny?
Couple.
I know. That's amazing. That's pretty funny.
But yeah, and we got that. And then again, in the summer, I'm going to be doing a diabetes study. And we just recently got some equipment to allow us to quantify arterial stiffness, essentially, arterial compliance. So we're going to be doing something along those lines as well. Probably I'll roll that in with the diabetes work initially here. But
you know what? And the arterial stiffness really is an issue, because I have for many years believed that the way we test blood pressure today is flawed. Because my analogy has always been that if you have stiff, thick arteries, And it's kind of like a hose. If you try to measure the pressure in an oil line by squeezing it and seeing how fast it collapses, if the oil line itself is degraded and soft, it's going to collapse easier than a brand new one or a rigid one.
That's a great analogy.
Yeah, and I've always thought, you know, there's people out there taking blood pressure medicine that don't really need it, because they really need to check blood pressure internally, either through some sort of combination of ultrasound and quantifying volume or something. It's like there's got to be a better way to test for blood pressure, because I don't believe that their blood pressure readings are accurate. You take a very muscular person who's like a power lifter type, who's got, you know, arteries and veins that from years of pressure have built up, you know, really strong walls, and you try to collapse that to read his blood pressure, you're going to get a false reading. I don't care what anybody says.
Well, it's certainly going to be a factor, right? And I completely agree. And so that's actually what a lot of people are now suggesting. And I really don't doubt that it'll be within a few years that you're going to see a lot of these devices in doctors' offices and clinics, so that you can actually take a picture of central blood pressure rather than what's going on at the brachial artery. It'll happen. I think it's really right around the corner, and this technology is becoming more and more prevalent and more affordable. So it'll start to happen. I really think that there are a lot of people who have that understanding.
And one last thing I wanted to mention to you. Do you know who Dr. Scott Connolly is, the fellow who started Metrex?
I should. I've heard the name. But
yeah, well, you've heard of Metrex, right? You know,
most
right?
Definitely.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, Dr. Connolly has been on my show. He's a sponsor of the show also. They have a product called Progenix that they just started advertising on the show. And we did a four-episode series on insulin resistance that you should go to Superhuman Radio and look in the archive, the RSS file. There's 4 one-hour shows on everything from metabolically what happens, symptomology, all the way down to what you can do to reverse insulin resistance in a very short period of time. Dr. Connolly has invested literally decades of his life in understanding this and is really leading the way to discuss the fact that and why I've had him on is because I believe this strongly. The etiology of a lot of diseases occur because of insulin resistance. You know, there's a lot of diseases out there today that find their genesis in insulin resistance.
That's becoming again more and more, I think, a widespread understanding of what, as a basis of what actually what causes us to ail as we get older in this country, certainly.
Yeah. Okay, so in summary, let's go ahead and summarize. So what you want my audience to understand about your study is.
Okay, is that that if you're just beginning and you believe that a profound or the maximum hormonal response is important to your training program, then that shorter rest period will do it. Things that basically elicit a profound or they're very painful lactate response also tend to elicit a more profound hormonal response, and then that you can bank on that difference being present for probably 4 or 5 weeks, and then after that, it's probably time to change up. Who knows what the washout? I would say, you know, kind of off the top of my head, 3 or 4 weeks of something different, and then again going back to that shorter rest period protocol to maximize that response again.
And I just had two thoughts while you were saying that. Number one. Those individuals who are insulin resistant tend to be develop something called lactic acidosis, which is a high degree of lactate buildup from exercise because of the difficulty for glucose to enter the cells and produce energy.
Yeah,
right?
There's a lot of reasons. Many times they can't metabolize fat well at all, so they're more and more dependent on carbohydrates for metabolism, and as a result, they're producing a lot more lactate.
So I wonder if those individuals who suffer from lactic acidosis produce a greater hormonal response to exercise. That would be my first question. My second thought is this, beta-alanine. Beta-alanine quenches hydrogen ions, which reduces lactate response, which is supposed to allow you to train harder and longer without fatigue. I wonder what the effects of beta-alanine are on hormonal response as a result. Interesting.
That's a fascinating study. That'd be a great question. I wouldn't even know how to estimate or hypothesize.
Yeah, I mean, somebody needs to do that. Somebody needs to take your study and duplicate it, but give these individuals beta-alanine and see if they see the same hormonal response
In other words, you're asking if the lactate response is what's driving the hormonal response.
Yeah.
And if it is, then you would expect that the supplement would mitigate that.
Well, yeah, if the lactate response is driving the hormonal response, then theoretically diabetics would probably have a greater hormonal response to exercise because they build up a lot more lactate faster, number one. And number two, those who are using beta-alanine, which reduces lactate response, and you're going to have less of a hormonal change.
Yeah. So that'd be a great question. Whether or not those two responses are parallel or whether or not one of them is causative.
Yeah, there you go. Listen, Dr. Burrish, I want to thank you very much for taking time to come on Supreme Radio and talk about this study today.
I've had a great time. I really appreciate the nature of your show, and I appreciate your inviting me.
Oh, my pleasure. Okay, well, stay tuned, and I'll be right back, and we'll close the show. Listen to some music first.
Life is a continuous journey, and Change Your Life Now gives you the tools for continuous empowerment. Change Your Life Now is a practical guide to the biological process of age reversal. It's deliberately understandable and concise, so you can employ its message immediately and begin to realize the changes within days. The reader need only provide a positive attitude, desire, and discipline, and the results are guaranteed. Visit superhumanradio.com and click the Change Your Life Now banner ad to learn more or to order your copy today. Don't wait another moment. Change your life now. Are you tired of the same old pre-workout product? Would you like to catapult your body's growth and performance potential to an entirely new level? LG Science's Anadrolic State GT is the world's first kinetic amplification system. Anadrolic State GT goes beyond the pre-workout powders in functionality, adaptation, and power. Anadrolic State GT is the first of its kind, allowing users to take aggressive control in the gym with ferocious focus, explosive energy, and dominating strength. Anadrolic State GT is available at bodybuilding.com, NutriPlanet, and other fine retailers. Get yours today and join the LG Sciences Uprising.
A company committed to truth in advertising, to science-driven product development, a company that still believes in accountability to its customers. All American EFX is that company. With a full line of performance-enhancing aids like Crealkaline EFX Pro, muscle pump amplifiers like Nitric EFX, growth and recovery enhancers like LBA Pro and LG5 Pro, and a fully tested core nutrition series. So if you want the very best in bodybuilding and performance supplements, go to any GNC or visit AAEFX.com today. That's AAEFX.com. All American EFX. We don't play games. We just help you win them.
PJ Braun knows how to get in shape and stay in shape. He's appeared in numerous bodybuilding and fitness magazines, and now he's ready to help you. Whether you're a man or a woman, PJ Braun has the expertise to help you reach your goals faster and easier than ever before. Utilize his one-on-one distance training services, and your friends will want to know what your secret is, but we'll never tell. Services are affordable and customizable to suit your individual needs. Nutrition, training, and supplementation are all covered. Stop spinning your wheels and start building the body that you've always dreamed of. Go to PJBraun.com today. That's PJBraun.com. Confused about which creatine product to take? Ancient Strength solves that problem. Ancient Strength combines the three most effective forms of creatine, creatine monohydrate, creatine phosphate, and creatine pyruvate, into a single product. Ancient Strength will propel your workouts to amazing new levels. Ancient Strength will give you the strength of your ancestors so you can push through those plateaus, eke out those last few reps that are the most productive in building new muscle. Get Ancient Strength today at NeedToBuildMuscle.com. Harness the strength of your ancestors with Ancient Strength.
Strength, recovery, and growth are the goals, and Progenics is the way. Progenics represents advanced dairy science, research, development, and biotechnology that liberates and concentrates the most effective fractions of protein. The results are increased muscle torque, faster recovery, and greater muscle growth. You won't find these ingredients in any other supplement on the market. Take the challenge. Go to progenexsrg.com to learn more about the benefits and science behind the Progenics products. Train harder than you've ever trained before. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Progenics banner ad to save 10% off your order. Progenics, where fantasy games meet science.
Get stronger. Feel younger. It's Superhuman Radio.
Welcome back to Superhuman Radio. Got my friend Don Orell from Applied Nutraceuticals on the phone. How you doing, Don?
I'm doing well, Carl. It's always good to be here.
It's good to be anywhere, isn't it? Nowadays.
Yeah, tell me about it.
Anyway, I just wanted to catch up with you. You know, we did a show with Dirk about The One, and I know we have a lot of Superhuman Radio listeners who have used The One. I've passed some emails along to you about people from in the country, outside the country, talking about their success with it. What's the feedback you're getting since the product has been launched?
It's been overwhelming. And first off, many thanks to you, Carl. We've had literally hundreds of emails, testimonials, many of which have mentioned your radio show, and kudos to your show as well as our product, and thanking basically you for introducing them to this product. So good stuff for both of us. But the feedback has been overwhelmingly positive, but we've also run across a couple of things that we think it would be noteworthy to bring to folks who are considering taking this product to their attention, because there are a couple of pitfalls that we didn't necessarily foresee upon launch, and now that we're into this about 10 weeks post-launch, we've sold over 10,000 units and have gotten a lot of data back, and almost unanimously, virtually 100% of the what I'll call non-responders, we've found a smoking gun as to something that's been either contraindicated or completely, you know, the wrong type of diet. But most of the time, they're taking some other product that competes or counteracts with the main ingredient in The One, which is, of course, a DHT-based molecule. So,
what kind of things could counteract it?
Well, there's a lot of things. First off, if you remember, oral antibiotics. Oral antibiotics basically kills a bacteria, which is needed to convert the molecule into a usable form, so it gets absorbed into the small GI.
Really?
Yeah. I recall way back in the day, when a lot of guys were experimenting with this. I'll date myself 20, 25 years ago. And that was always one of the things that I guess was common knowledge, and now it was because one of those things that's forgotten, kind of like little kids out in the woods, don't eat mushrooms. What do you mean you don't eat mushrooms? Well, it's kind of the same thing. You know, we knew that when we were kids because we played outside. Now kids are playing video games, and they don't understand that stuff.
Right.
And that was just kind of one of the things that was what I thought was somewhat common knowledge, is that you don't take oral antibiotics when you're taking an oral anabolic. That actually goes, by the way, is also applicable to birth control pills. So any of you guys out there who have women on the pill and they're taking antibiotics,
wow,
best be warned.
That's amazing. There's a lot of women who get pregnant on the pill, and it could be because they were using antibiotics prior.
Exactly. And I've read several studies to that exact point where they're like, I've been religious with taking the pill. It's like, yeah, but that little infection you had, and you took a 5-day battery of Cipro or whatever, and that can be all it takes.
Wow, that's amazing.
Yeah, so that I think is one of the most common things we found. An individual may be taking antibiotics, let's say erythromycin or something, for their skin. Maybe they've got acne, which is common among anabolic users. So here we go. They're taking one thing to cure something, and it's actually counteracting the other products. So,
right.
So that's one of the first things we've seen. Similarly, on the prescription drug side, another common one we see is finasteride, which is basically the generic name for Propecia, which is basically
it's a 5-alpha reductase reducer. Actually, it stops 5-alpha reductase from converting into DHT.
Correct. So it inhibits the conversion process, but it also competes with those DHT receptors.
Uh-huh.
And by reducing serum levels of DHT, and these androgens are, essential for fertility and all this other stuff, you start to have a long chain of effects that significantly diminish any DHT type anabolic. I would be remiss in to try to guess at a percentage, but clearly you're not going to get the full bang for the buck when you're taking a competing product.
This would probably be true if you were taking Anadrol as well.
I would never recommend taking that stuff anyway.
Well, I know, but I'm just saying Anadrol is a DHT oral as well, so it's interesting. All right,
yeah.
So what other things? I mean, are there lots of over the counter? Like, what about people who take liver protectants like milk thistle And what's the other stuff?
Milk thistle fine, Hawthornberry fine. As a matter of fact, we recommend that to be taken on cycle. But saw palmetto, which has been used as a botanical treatment for BPH, which is benign prostatic hyperplasia. You know, basically the benign version of prostate enlargement. You know, we've seen a lot of guys taking that stuff, and it's a very common ingredient in male formula multivitamins and just male support products.
Right.
And that actually, again, competes for DHT sites to a lesser extent, you know, because it's an herbal versus a pharmaceutical strength. But clearly, guys that are taking, especially if they're thinking along the lines that if I take extra soft palmetto, I'm going to be protecting any of those DHT-type side effects. Again, you're also going to be you're going to be preventing the DHT positive effects as well.
Right.
So saw palmetto is a no-no when taking any of these types of products. And then in general, like, you know, NSAIDs, the non-steroidal anti-inflammatories, you know, this can slow or even potentially stop the cascade effects of the anabolic by blocking prostaglandin biosynthesis.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, because prostaglandins are critical for the anabolic effect of any anabolic steroid.
Yeah, yeah. So there's some, you know, and that's, you know, you got a guy who's got achy joints and he's taking Celebrex, and he's not getting what he wants to get. Now the good news is that, you know, some of the positive effects of the one are going to help your joints anyway. But you know, we've had both effects. We've had some guys say, hey, my joints are feeling a little dry. We've had some other guys saying, boy, they make my joints feel better. So, you know, I'll stop short of saying, you know, that's going to be a sweeping effect that everybody's going to witness. But I haven't had too many guys coming back saying that, you know, because I couldn't take my Celebrex, you know, I find it impossible to train. You know,
right,
those
right.
types of things. So, you know, I'd say the rule of thumb would be if you're not 100% positive, there's not going to be some kind of contraindication. You're probably better off not taking it while you're trying to administer this particular product.
Sure, sure. So, but overall, the feedback has been very positive. At least all the emails that I've gotten that I've passed along to you have been all people who said that they put on weight like they expected to, and they were very happy with the product. So, and then that's gotta be the general consensus, right?
It is. And the numbers are all over the map. You know, we're seeing probably, if I was to take middle of the bell curves, probably going to be right around 15, 16 pounds.
Right.
We've had a report 27 pounds, a report 29 pounds.
And then, you know, and then the other thing is, it has to be said that if you're going to take anything and you're not having, you're not giving yourself adequate calories, so you have the building blocks to even build muscle. You can't build muscle without adding calories. The idea behind an anabolic is, the calories you add will be predominantly made into muscle versus a large amount of fat.
Correct.
But you still have to give yourself the building blocks to build the muscle, and that's
absolutely.
Calories.
Absolutely.
All right, so that's another episode of Superhuman Radio. Thank you so much for listening, and we'll see everybody tomorrow.